Yeah, we're recording now. This is going to be Scott Graneman's presentation of Google Does That Too. Oh, all of Google's services and software is going to be released under a Creative Commons license?
Assuming it's recorded.
Assuming it records.
Yes.
Okay. And where do I drop this? Kick it off on the floor?
Well, it's Craig, so let's test it.
Right. I suggest you put it in your shirt pocket.
Yeah. I thought about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, if you hear boom, 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 boom the whole time. All right, guys, good to see you guys again. I'm here because I foolishly, during my last presentation in August, suggested, I said, you guys should have a presentation done on Google. And Stan got me in a headlock afterward and wouldn't let me go until I agreed to do it. So here I am doing this talk on Google. So the talk is all of Google's services and software. Now, I think I can do this. I've spoken to you guys before, and I got over 200 slides in that time. I'm going to go for that again tonight. I actually have every freaking thing Google does in this slide deck I'm going to go over tonight. My advice to you would be, even if you think you know a lot about Google, you're going to learn a lot of stuff. I learned a lot of stuff just preparing this thing. I would have a piece of paper there, and as I go past this stuff, write down the thing that interests you, just as a reminder later. Or don't. Just let the words wash over you like a spring rain.
Are these slides going to be available?
Yes, I'm going to make these slides available as a PDF, both as slides and in handout form. So I will give that. It'll be on my website. Stan, I'll let him post it to you guys and all that stuff. Yes, sir.
Everything that Google does that is publicly.
Well, of course. Yes, I have contacts in Google, but I don't know anything about that. Yeah. So you guys probably, that's hard to see, but it says I will use Google before asking dumb questions. So most of you guys probably know about that, and you've told other people that. So let's start with the basics. The basics are this. You guys have probably all seen that. Everybody in this room has used it today. We all sat down, went to Google, typed in some sort of query. In my case, I type my last name in, I get results. There I am. Unfortunately, that's where most people stop. The vast majority of people out there type a simple query into Google and really don't ever go any further than that. In fact, most people don't even bother to look right up here at this little menu that they kind of stuck up there. I'd be curious to see if maybe some of you have never even bothered to do that. If you click on more, you actually get other stuff, and Google actually changes this. So periodically, they will move things in and out of here as they want to emphasize or de-emphasize various services they're offering. Well, you're going to find out. Hold your horses, son. So if you click on that, you get this. And I encourage you guys, if you click on more and then go to more again, you end up at this page, which is actually also includes this at the bottom. And this is a list pretty much, but not all, of the services and software that Google makes available. But even this isn't everything, as you're going to find out. So I'm basically going to walk you through all of this. Yes, all of this. Let's start with search. So first, I'm doing it in alphabetical order. So let's start with Google Alerts. I bet a lot of you guys don't know this. If you research something a lot, or if you have competitors that you want to keep up with, or a topic that you want to keep up with, you go to Google Alerts. And by the way, virtually all of this I am showing you is predicated upon you having a Google account. So you have to have a Google account of some sort. They're free. You just give them your name, email address, select a password. It's pretty not very invasive at all. So this is obviously predicated upon having a Google account. So you put the search terms in, the type of search you want to do, how often you want the search to be run, your email address, and bam, you've now created an alert. So for instance, I put my name in there because I like to know what people are saying about the books I write and the articles I write, who's calling me a dumbass where, on what blog, so I can go and respond politely. And so I do that, and here are an example of some of the alerts I've set up. I wrote a book called Hacking Nopics a while ago. So I've got that alert, I've got one for my name, and periodically I get emails like this. So this is an email I received saying, hey, we have a new result index. So they only show you the the latest index results. You will not get duplicates. So the first couple of times you get emails from this, you may get 10, 20 results, but it'll start paring down quite a bit. So in the case of hacking Nopix, I hardly ever see any because the book's been out quite a while. So if you guys are looking for a way to keep up with a competitor, with some information, something you're interested in, perhaps a piece of software, this is a fantastic way to have automated emails sent to you about those topics. And by the way, you might also, we'll get to that later. Okay, let's keep going. Google Blog Search. Google actually has an interface that will only search blogs. So if you want to find out what the blogosphere is saying about a particular topic, you simply go to Google Blog Search, type the topic in you're looking for, click on Search Blogs. So I typed in iPhone, for instance, because I have one and therefore I am cool. And so here we go, related blogs about the iPhone only. These are the latest entries about the iPhone. Notice you can sort by relevance and by date over here. Notice also you can get very granular in exactly when this stuff came out. The other thing I think is pretty cool is you can subscribe to this as an RSS or Atom feed in your RSS reader. So that is absolutely wonderful. In fact, that's what I typically do for this stuff. I would recommend subscribing with Google Reader, which I will talk about shortly, to the RSS feed. And if you scroll down here, if you actually scroll down the page, you can create an email alert for this, where you'll get a Google alert for blog searches on this topic. You can add a blog search gadget to your Google homepage, or there you go, you can subscribe to the feed in Google Reader. So it's really nice. I also wanted to show you guys the advanced search options. Google is really good about providing very nice, intelligent, advanced search options. So here, you can search for posts written within the last hour, the last day. You can say only blogs at this URL, by author, and so on. So it's really an effective way to search blogs. Google Book Search is getting them in a lot of trouble right now. The publishers are suing Google, claiming that they are violating fair use. I think, of course, that's ridiculous. I am assured most of the people in this room would agree that that is well within the rights of fair use. The idea being you go to Google, I type my name in there, type Graneman in, and as a result, I get all the books that have Graneman in there. Now, these first three I wrote. But then we get stuff from Gary Graneman, Psychosocial and Public Impacts of New HIV Therapies by O.R. Graneman, no relation. So you get that. That's a really cool way to find books. Now you don't have to search for an author. You could, of course, search for a topic or a phrase and get a list back of books that contain that phrase or are about that topic. What I think is kind of cool is this is list view. If you click on cover view, you get this. And it actually shows you the covers. Now, at this point, if you click on a book, so if you click on Linux Phrase Book, you get this. And it actually allows you at this point to look inside the book. So you can actually start paging through the book. You can scroll down. You can click on Contents here, look at Popular Passages. You can buy the book, which, I mean, to my mind, again, the suit that the publishers have against Google right now is outrageous because, yes, Google is making a little money off of ads at the bottom, but they're clear. First of all, they don't put the entire book up unless the publisher said it's okay. So Linux Phrase Book, I looked, and maybe there's 20 pages, maybe, total. That, to me, is the equivalent of being at the bookstore or going over to a friend's house and just kind of pawing your way through the book enough to know, this looks like a good book. I like the way this is written. This looks helpful. Not to mention, the indexes are almost always available. The table of contents are available in full, which, again, most of us would want to look at and care about and make sure the topics we want to cover are in the book. But, my God, they're providing links so you can buy the book so the publishers can make money off of this. So, to me, this is pretty ridiculous. It's a powerful tool. I'm really excited about the fact that Google is digitizing this. By the way, again, something else we'll care about. If a book is in the public domain, the entire book is available, and oftentimes Google has links to download the book in a variety of formats, which, as it should be. It's in the public domain. My God. Google Checkout. If any of you in here have used PayPal, PayPal does two things, really. PayPal is used for me to send money to you, so kind of a personal way to transfer money. But PayPal can also be used to pay merchants. when Google came out with Google Checkout, a lot of people said, oh, this is the PayPal killer. Not really. In fact, not at all, because Google Checkout does not allow me to send money to Ed. It only allows me to buy things from merchants. So if Ed has a store online where he is selling whatever Ed is selling, I can go on there, click on Google Checkout, and transfer money from my bank account or my Google Checkout account to Ed, and he can then transfer the money into his bank account or get a check. So that's what Google Checkout is all about. Now really, going to the Google Checkout page ain't that useful, because it really isn't much to do there. Instead, what you want to do is you go to a store that is using Google Checkout, and that's where you use it. So you'd go to Sierra Trading Post, you'd buy your stuff, or pick the stuff you want, add it to your shopping cart. When you're done, you would go to the page and it said, okay, you can pay by credit card, you can pay by bank transfer, let's say, you can pay by Google Checkout. Sometimes it says, and you can pay by PayPal, whatever you want. So that's what Google Checkout is. It's an interesting service. They have all sorts of incentives in place to try to get more and more and more online businesses to use Google Checkout and make it available. If you buy certain Google services that cost money, lo and behold, they use Google Checkout. Google Desktop is actually software that, lo and behold, runs on your desktop. So what's interesting about it is it runs on Windows, it runs on Macs, and it runs on Linux. So this is the page where you can download the version for Windows. And you can see, by the way, any of you that have looked at Vista or have had the misfortune to actually have to use Vista, you might know those gadgets that Microsoft sticks on the side. And so you can kind of see where some of this is going. This is the page for Macs, and this is the page for Linux. And I love how ours looks like crap. Isn't that nice? So the version for Linux, the Mac version looks all cute and Mac-y, and the Windows version looks nice. And of course, the Linux version, we get it's functional. It's just not very pretty. So when you install Google Desktop on your computer, basically what it does is automatically index and then allow you to search the contents of your hard drive. Now, I know I'm talking to a bunch of guys that think Find and Grep, basically that's all you need. And Lord knows I use Find and Grep all the time. So to be honest with you guys, I've never installed Google Desktop. I don't see a purpose for it. But if you're using Windows, this could be fantastic, because it's my understanding the default search built into Windows, Vista, is an abomination. Yeah, I've heard it's just appallingly bad. This indexes pretty much everything on your computer. It indexes, if you're using Linux, man and info pages, which is cool. Indexes Microsoft Office documents, images and music files, ODF documents, so OpenOffice and StarOffice documents, Thunderbird email, which means it indexes mbox files. They call it Thunderbird email, but that's obviously mbox. HTML files, PDF and PS files, text files, source code, and then it says Gmail. Now, some of you are probably thinking, wait a sec, Gmail is web-based. How would it index my Gmail? Well, what happens is when you click search, it opens up this web page, and you'll notice the URL is 127.0.0.1 with port 4664. So what Google Desktop actually does is run a web server on your machine that is a web-based interface to the index it is created of your computer. And so desktop has now been added to these other things. You type your topic in there, and you can either search the desktop or search the web. This is where it gets a little freaky, because then you get this result. But again, these are files on your computer. Here's instant message messages. But notice you still got this other Google stuff up there, which is out on the web. Well, if you go to the web search, so now I'm at Google, it actually inserts a link to your desktop search as you're searching the web in your browser.
So it's searching both.
It searches both. That's correct. So anytime you can either open up the local web server page, but also search the outside web, or if you go to the outside web, at any time you can also search your own computer. So it allows you to do both. if you're concerned about privacy, which you should be, according to them, they don't collect data, they don't take the data. That's what you're going to ask. I knew it. I could see the light of paranoia shining in your eyes.
Just a security guy.
That's right. That's no problem. So yeah, according to them, they do not collect data on this. They do not store this data. It's totally hands-off, which is as it should be, or it would be a privacy disaster. But there you go. Now again, I've not used it. I'd be shocked if most of you guys who are running Linux are going to use it. On my Mac, I don't use it because Spotlight does a great job. But on Windows, makes a lot of sense. Google Earth, this is freaking awesome. This was actually a piece of software from a company called Keyhole that Google bought a few years ago and then made free, available to everybody. Google Earth, you simply go there and you can download it for Mac or Windows and Linux under, is that native? I think it's Wine based, I believe, or is it native? Is it native? Okay. So it's available for everybody. Some of the cool stuff you can see with this, you can see Wikipedia places, you can see real-time earthquakes, you can see European hotel reservations, you can see NASA's animation showing the complete view of Earth for every month of the year from NASA. This is kind of cool. 3D models showing timelines of the 60 tallest structures built in London. There's even more. Here's some multimedia stuff. So there's some really, really awesome things you can do with Google Earth.
But this is the basic Earth.
What do you mean, the basic Earth?
There are multiple levels of Google Earth.
Meaning what?
There's Google Earth. I think there are three tiers.
Oh, you mean there's the
two,
pro?
Four tiers that are for pay.
Yeah, one
yeah.
For.
Yeah. There's one. I think there's only two. There's free and pay, right, to my knowledge.
I think there's two more.
Okay. Regardless.
It was that way when they started.
Okay. But there's other stuff you can do, like here, the Forbes 10 Most Expensive Homes, Catalog of Avian Flu, places quoted in Shakespeare's plays. I mean, there's just some really, really, really cool stuff because they've encouraged the worldwide community to add things to Google Earth. So I actually made a movie today showing you some of the features of Google Earth and what you can do with it. So here we're starting out, and we're going to zoom in. You can store places, so I'm now going to zoom into my house. So you can save places you're interested in. And I'm sorry it's so dark. The projector's just a little dark. And so we're zooming in. So this is 6047 Waterman, and I'm scrolling in at this point, and now I'm dragging it over, and that's my house. That's my old white van that I totaled about 3 years ago. So this is a picture that's a little out of date. I'm now going to do a tour. So I clicked on play, and it starts out by taking me back to 6047 Waterman. And then we're going to do a Hulk jump through the air over to Web Sanity, my company. That's what I call them. So now we're hovering over Web Sanity's site. And now we're going to take an even bigger jump 3 hours west to my mom's house in Marshall, Missouri, where I grew up. So we're flying through the air. Now we're zooming in on that. There's the house right there. And finally, we're going to jump to the New York Jets, where my brother works out in New York. So we are jumping all halfway across the country and zooming in to where the New York Jets headquarters is at this point. Pretty darn cool. Now, at this point, let's go to Times Square. Since we're so close to Manhattan, we might as well jump over to Times Square. And we get into Times Square here. And again, you can scroll in and out to control the altitude. I'm sorry it's a little dark, but you can do more than just control the altitude. You can rotate your view, and you can control the angle with which you're seeing. The problem is this is two-dimensional. So even though it's nice, I now am going to enable the 3D buildings, and bam, now we've got 3D structures viewable in Manhattan that we can swirl around, move in and out. And again, these were all added by other people. And you can do this yourself. It's very easy, and they encourage people to do. I have not found a lot in St. Louis. So, you know, if some of us get interested in this, this might be a nice thing to do to add to Google Earth, would be to include some of these 3D structures for landmarks and cool buildings here in St. Louis. Might be worth checking out. So that's Google Earth. It's really fun. It's awesome. You do need a decent computer to run it. Don't, you know, if you got a Pentium 3, don't bother. Pentium 4, I probably wouldn't bother. Yeah, I mean, it'll be slow and choppy, but you can do it. But if you've got a new computer, go for it. It's fun as heck. It's a good way to teach geography to people, to look up stuff, check things out. They update the maps all the time. It's awesome. Google Finance, if any of you have investments and you want to check on your stocks or the markets, it's a great way to keep up to date with that. I looked up Red Hat, for instance, and if you go to Red Hat on Google Finance, you get an astonishing amount of information. You get news, charts. You can pretty much get whatever you want. You'll notice this little bar right here allows you to scroll back and forth to see the full history of the stock price from Red Hat. If you scroll down on the page, you get related companies, financial information, blog posts about Red Hat. They have discussion boards. Scroll further, key stats and ratios, summary of the company, key events in the company. Scroll down further and you have the management. So, I mean, you can get an enormous amount of very useful information about a company very easily and very quickly. You can also set up your own portfolio there. You'll notice back on the top here where it says add to portfolio, and if you do that, you can actually store information about stocks you're interested in. So I actually have Apple and Red Hat. I bought 9 shares of Apple the day the iPhone came out, and I bought it at it doesn't have what I bought it there, but it cost me $1,097. I've made $599 in 4 months because I knew it was going to sell and go up. So there you go. I wish I had about 1,000 shares. Actually, I wish I'd bought it in 97 right when Jobs came back and it was $7 a share. So you can really keep a good track of your markets and your stocks and so on. Moving on to iGoogle. iGoogle is basically, if you've ever used My Yahoo, it is their answer to My Yahoo. It is a customized homepage where you can choose widgets and pick what you want up here. You can have a quick index to your Gmail, map search, your Google Calendar. There's an app called Countdown. I was trying to keep track of how many days till I die, kind of a little incentive to keep busy. So there you go. Works very well, actually. So there you go. If you click over here where it says add stuff, then heck, go nuts. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these little gadgets that you can put on your iGoogle page. All you do is reorder them is grab it and drag it. It's all got that yummy Ajax-y goodness in it, so you can just drag and move, and it's super easy to use. So it's a fun little tool, and a lot of people I know do, in fact, make this their homepage. So it loads, and there's the information they want. Yes?
I use it, and I've got one tab that just has Linux stuff, another tab, Linux stuff, another tab,
Cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
So you do it as tab.
In fact, right here, add a tab. So you can add tabs and name them whatever you want and go to 10.
Can you secure a tab?
Can you secure a tab?
It's password protected.
It's all password protected. The only you can see this page. You have to log in. Yeah, since you have to log into your account to access it. It's not publicly available. Google Images. I bet everybody in here has searched Google Images at least one time or another. You simply go to Google, type in your search. And lo and behold, I type my name in, and here I have pictures of my books, pictures of me on vacation, more books, pictures of cats. What's interesting is, though, and I wanted to make sure you guys all knew about this, is this little bit right here where it says showing, and you can choose what size of images you want. So I use that all the time. If you're looking for a slide, a picture to use for a slide, for instance, you probably want a good size image. So I use that to look for extra large images or large images or so on. So that can be a really cool way to find that. What's interesting is that over here where it says Google Image Labeler, this is new. What you do is you click on it, and for the next couple of minutes, 2 minutes, you and another randomly selected person are shown the same pictures, and you're supposed to type words that describe the picture. And then what they do with that is use that to better bring up good results from the images. So it's purely voluntary basis. You get little points if you do it. And the more descriptive you are, the more points you get. This dude, this blew me away, has got 16 million points. So that guy must do nothing else all day but hang out here and label images. So it takes all kinds. But there you go. So that's kind of a cool thing some of you guys might want to be involved in. Google Maps. I am going to spend quite a bit of time on Google Maps. I use Google Maps tonight. I'm sure most people in here have used Google Maps at one time or another. But Google Maps is one of those huge, huge things that there is so much just that it'll blow you away. So, I mean, let's start out. You go to Google Maps, bam, there you are. You can see the United States. You can type stuff in. So I type my address in, and there we go. We're getting the typical map. There it is. And you can notice you can get directions and all that stuff. I'm going to talk about that in a sec. If you click on the satellite button, you get the satellite view of the area. Notice they do mark the streets for you automatically. But this is where it gets kind of interesting. Right?
Offset.
It what?
Now, how do you... I have a problem with, when I use Google Maps and Google Earth, that it offsets the address.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah, that's... Hold on. I want to tell you about that. You're absolutely right. In fact, this was wrong. So I'd like you guys to notice something. You see this new right here where it says edit? When I went to this location for my house just 2 weeks ago, and it's been doing this for years. I mean, of course, the first thing I think most people do when they discovered Google Maps or Yahoo Maps, type your house in. Well, it drove me nuts that this marker was actually here. So it was off by about 50, 100 yards, and that bothered me forever. Well, Google realizes that, and so what they do is now you click edit, and lo and behold, you get this. Move marker or view history. So I clicked move marker and moved it up the street in front of the correct house. If you click view history, it shows you where it was originally and the date I moved it and how many feet I moved it. Thank you. That is awesome. So if you're having a problem with the location coming up offset, you can now fix it. No questions asked. You don't. Now, if you move it more than I think, I don't know, 400 feet or something like that, it doesn't take immediately till somebody at Google checks it out and makes sure you weren't goofing off. But for little moves like that, it assumes it's correct, and there you go. So pretty cool. That's really awesome of them that they finally did that. Now you'll notice up here, I was clicked on search results. If you click on My Maps, you get a different set of results and different things you can do. So if you click on My Maps, lo and behold, this is a map I created. You can create maps and bring up other locations. So I am living with this guy temporarily right here. That is a restaurant on the corner, Tanner B's. So I inserted that and that, and I marked these myself. Well, and I can let you guys collaborate on this with me. So if I click collaborate, this window opens and I can invite any of you guys to help collaborate as well. So let's say we're part of a neighborhood group, and we want to label the areas of our neighborhood to let people know what's interesting, what's unique, what's special about our area. As a neighborhood, we can collaborate on this and make this map public so that anybody else could then come here and look at this and really get a detailed understanding of the neighborhood or area in which we're living. That is great. But it goes much further than that, because you can also do real estate searches. So you check Google real estate search and this pops up. I typed in 63130 University City. You put the price range in, how many beds, how many baths, any keywords, hit search. I got four results. I clicked on one of them and this pops up. There's the location. It shows me the link to the more information about it with a summary, a picture, who put this up, and so on. So if you're looking for a home, this can be a really powerful way to find a home in an area.
Do they also have commercial real estate?
I have no idea if they do or not. I have no idea. Could. One thing I did notice is not everybody has listings on here, no. So there's a lot missing. No, not at all. Nothing even close at this point in time. But it is good to start with. If you instead click on gas prices from Gas Buddy, you put your city, state, or zip in there, bam, hit it, and it shows you where you can find gas prices. You click on one of them, it tells you what the price is, where it is, what the location, and so on. You can get direction. Excuse me, save to maps. However, not every gas station is on here. For instance, I was trying to find the big Amoco, the BP, and it's not showing up. So not everything, but those of you who are obsessive about getting the lowest possible gas price, you might be able to use this. This next thing is awesome. I went on vacation to Washington, D.C. earlier this year, and I did a lot of walking while I was there. When I got back, I thought to myself, I wonder how far I walked that last day I was in Washington, D.C. I know I walked a heck of a long ways, but I wonder exactly how far it was. And I ended up finding a map online and having to do this laborious process of measuring and trying to figure out how far it was. And it took me about an hour and a half, and it was just tedious and painful. Well, I wish I had known about this. This makes it a million times easier. You click on Distance Measurement Tool. And I wanted to start, I often used to walk from my house to Blueberry Hill. And so this is the route I would take. And so what you do is you go click, 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 click. And then you're done, and it tells you the total distance is 4,235 feet. That is awesome. I wish I'd had this tool to find out how far I walked in D.C. But it goes far beyond that, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. Far beyond that. Because you'll notice this. I'm feeling geeky. Well, good God, I'm talking to an audience of you guys. We're all feeling geeky. Let's check this out. What happens when we click on that? So you click on I'm feeling geeky, and instead now you can change the measurement units from feet to whatever you want. Want to do it in furlongs? Want to do it in fathoms? Want to do it in bore radiuses? Want to do it in leagues, inches, nautical miles? Want to do it in tech points? That one cracked me up. Tech points. How many tech points did I walk? Yeah. So I said, okay, I walked 4,235 feet. Damn, that's far. I got some exercise in. How far did I walk in miles? I bet I walked at least a mile and a half. Nope. I walked 0.8 miles. Damn. Now I don't feel nearly as good about myself. That's nothing. What if I did it in light years? Oh, no, that's not good at all. No, light years, very, very bad. What if I did it in pool lengths, Olympic swimming pools? God, I walked over 25 Olympic swimming pools. It's almost like swimming 25 Olympic pools. I feel a lot better about myself. But then I thought, what could I really, really feel good about myself walking? And that's right, I chose Babylonian cubits. I walked 2,602 cubits of Lagash. That's a good amount of exercise right there, as well as being fun to say. And so next time I do this, I'm going to walk up and down Del Mar ranting with my arms in the air about cubits of Lagash, and we'll see how long they let me walk up and down Del Mar. But anyway, that's a fun little tool. Yes, exactly. So this is a fun little tool, a good way to find out measurements. But again, there's more, because there are popular maps. So you can actually click on Browse Popular Maps, and it'll actually show you maps of the popular maps people have created about this area. And so I clicked on St. Louis Sites, and you start clicking on the little pins, and there's the St. Louis Science Center, for instance. So that's pretty darn neat. But there's more. Because now you can also search for businesses. So now I've clicked on Find Businesses. I'm no longer on Search the Map. I'm now on Find Businesses. I typed in Thai Restaurant, St. Louis, Missouri, and I get these results. There you go. If I click on one of them, if I click on more info for King and I get this really cool little pop-up here with an address, directions again. I can get directions, a map, pictures, hours, a really nice amount of information. If instead I click on this link, I get this little pop-up in terms of where the restaurant is, again with some information. Very cool. But now it gets even cooler, because I can get directions. So I want to get directions from my business, from Web Sanity, over to over to the Thai restaurant. And so I typed in from start address of my business and the end address of the Thai restaurant, and I'm sure most everybody in here has looked at this, and you've gotten directions from Google Maps. Ah, but there's so much more you can do, because you'll notice traffic. So if you click on the traffic button, it shows you the traffic patterns. Now, these are green. I know they're hard to see. You can also see yellow and red. As St. Louis streets get more and more screwed up over the next couple of years, this will definitely become more and more and more useful. So yes, you can get traffic information about that to know if you're going to be, if you should plan accordingly and how you should plan. But you can do even more than that, and this is really cool, because you see right here where it says add destination? I mean, a lot of times, maybe 90% of the time, we want to drive from point A to point B and we're done. Ah, but what if we have a lot of errands to run? What if we want to go from point A to point B to point C to point D to point E and back to point A? Wouldn't it be nice if we could do that? Well, before this, you had to keep making more and more maps, and it was tedious, and you ended up with lots of pieces of paper. Now you simply click Add Destination. I put in the next destination, which is the YMCA. So, after eating all that Thai food, we need to work it off. So now we're going to drive to the YMCA after we're done. So here's the directions to that. So we're now going from point B over to point C. There you go. Pretty darn neat. But what if you don't want to drive on the highways? What if you want to avoid the highways, because we all know what the highways are like? Well, if you notice, there is a button right here that says avoid highways. So you check that box and it gives you a different route, which I kind of think is almost more direct, a lot more stoplights, but still. And it shows you there a different route without having to deal with the highways. That's awesome. Love that. Thank you. But if you click on print, if you click the print button right here, this really nicely formatted page comes up with the instructions of how to get there, where you turn, the complete map, the start and end points of each one. You can put notes up here. You click print, and it's really nice to have a one or two page set of instructions to drive on your entire route. Let's keep going. If you type in Museum of Modern Art, New York, New York, for instance, notice how they show you all the subway stops in New York. That's really nice. But I'd like you guys to notice something that we did not have in St. Louis, but it's not very useful, trust me. You see that terrain button and the street view button? Now, there is no street view button for St. Louis yet. I'll talk about that in a moment. There is a terrain button, but it's just not that useful. What happens if you click terrain? Well, in a manner similar to that of Google Earth, you get a 3D view of the various buildings in that location that you can kind of slide around in. You can't do the cool, you know, get the angle like I was doing on Google Earth. That's what Google Earth is for, but it's very useful. If you click on street view, you get this little person that appears here. When you click on that little guy, this opens up, this pop-up opens up, and it actually shows you a picture, in this case of MoMA, the Museum of Modern Arts, and you see these, it's kind of hard to see, but you can see one arrow here. If you click on those arrows, you start going down the street, and you see photographs of the street as you keep going. If you click this rotate button, you can rotate around and see the actual view of what it would be like to walk on the street in that area. Now, how did they do that? Well, earlier this year, some people noticed in some of the bigger cities in the United States, a truck driving around that had this weird black thing sitting on the top of it. And here's a close-up picture of that thing. Well, you guys can probably figure what this is. This is a camera with lenses going in a 360-degree angle. And basically, they paid these dudes. Can you imagine getting paid just to drive a van around every street in a big city, and that's all you have to do? And so they would just drive around and take all these pictures. And we ended up with Google Street View. And here are the cities, as of yesterday, where they have Street View available. Nothing in Missouri yet. Hopefully we'll be getting there soon. But they just added about 8 more. So I'm sure we'll get on there hopefully soon. Well, what's funny is a lot of people are upset about Google Street View due to privacy concerns. Here's the problem. You're in public. You have no right to privacy in public. So if Google Street View catches you picking your nose while you're walking down the street, There's not a lot you can do about it. You were in public. In the same way, I can take a picture of you picking your nose while you're walking down the street, so can Google. The difference is bazillions of people will see you picking your nose if Google takes the picture, as opposed to just the people in this group, which I will forward it to. So let's look at some of the more embarrassing pictures that Google has captured, because I like to humiliate people I don't know. So for instance, this guy is tripping and falling. Oops. This guy, if you back up, you can see it. Again, I'm sorry it's so dark. Let me turn down the lights. That doesn't make it much better. This guy here is walking out of an adult bookstore. Actually, it's a strip club. I'm sorry. He's walking out of a strip club. This guy is walking, and it's hard to see. It says adult bookstore. That guy's actually walking into an adult bookstore. Now, if you are upset by something you see, ooh, that's not good. If you are upset by something you see on Google, you can have it removed. You can petition Google, and they will take out potentially embarrassing pictures of you. I happen to have gotten the picture that they took out here. It is a woman getting into a truck, and you cannot see squat, but she is getting into a truck, and you can clearly see her thong panties. So she was a little upset that her undies were showing to everybody in the world, so she asked Google. But there are some girls sunbathing that managed to make it in. This is kind of hard to see. This is a woman bent over, and these two guys walking by are helpfully looking at her to make sure she doesn't fall over. I'm sure that's what they're doing. This guy is littering, just sitting here throwing his papers everywhere. This car needs a tune-up. It's a little hard to tell there, but smoke is coming out of it. This guy is jaywalking across the street. This guy, and this is almost impossible for you to see, but right here is a sign that says no parking, and the guy's parked right in front of it. Sometimes you see these, and you're like, what is the story behind this? And again, I'm sorry you can't see this. This is a city street, and this woman's completely wrapped in a blanket, and just walking around wrapped in a blanket. I really hope you can see this one, because no. This is a couple sitting on a bench, and that guy's hand is very close to his woman, shall we say, in a public place. This one is rather interesting. What is this guy doing? Did he forget his keys? Is he breaking into this apartment building? Exactly what is going on? This is very hard to see. This is a man slugging another man. So they actually caught a fist fight in New York, of course, in the middle of that. And then if you go down further down the street, that guy's now chasing the guy down the street and pounding on him as he goes. And the van actually captured them like five different times going down the street with this guy just wailing on this other guy.
And my monitor real good? I mean, it's not visible.
It looks fine on my monitor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the projector. And this is my all-time favorite. This is gone. You will never be able to see this anyplace else. Sometimes you gotta go. When you gotta go, you gotta go. No matter what. So this guy, that's his bicycle, and you know, had to take a pit stop somewhere. So there you go. Got captured by Google. Let's move on to Google News. Google News is a one-stop shop for over 4,500 different news sources. So every 15 minutes, Google crawls 4,500 different news sources and, using their algorithms, divides everything up into different categories and kind of unifies it together. Here are the major categories. Yes, you can subscribe to RSS and Atom feeds depending on your searches. You can personalize it and say, I want to see five tech stories and only two sports stories, whatever you want. So you can customize this. It's a fantastic tool. Google Notebook is kind of an interesting amalgamation of a tool, because it's partly browser-based and partly web-based. So you go to Google Notebook, and it's actually a Firefox extension. So you install the Google Notebook Firefox extension, restart Firefox, and then I cut it off. I cut off the status bar, but down in the status bar of your browser it says Google Notebook, and you click it, and this pops up, and it floats over the web pages you go to. And you can make as many little notebooks as possible. And basically, a notebook is a clip repository. So basically, you highlight text or pictures you're interested in and then click the clip button. So I highlighted this text right here, and then I clicked clip, and it immediately copies the text into my Google Notebook, and I can highlight images, clip, and it goes in there, and then you can type a summary or description of the text or picture and keep it in your Google Notebook. Now, in that sense, it's browser-based, right? And so some of you are thinking, well, I have more than one computer. What can I do? Well, there's actually also a web page called Google Notebook where your Google Notebooks appear, and you can go there. You can make them public. You can keep them private, whatever you want. So it's a really cool way to kind of make a clipbook that can go with you as you use your browser, use your web page, and so on. Yes, sir?
In your notebook, will it cite the source?
It's up to you. I don't know the details on that. I do not think it... Well, it has the link back to the web page. So that was automatically put in. I did not put that link in.
So any page you take a clip shot of, it'll take you to put the URL.
That's correct. The URL is inserted automatically for you. Yeah. If you want more detail, go for it.
Then you looked at it.
Yes, the date and the date you looked at it. I don't know what would happen if I clicked on that, if I would get more information. So it can be a good way if you're doing research on a topic. Again, have different notebooks, put it all together, be able to take it around with you. Now we get to something a lot of us care about because we all know how screwed up the American patent system is. Yes, sir?
I didn't understand. It keeps that copy of that notebook up on Google?
Yes.
So you can get to it from different...
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. We all know how screwed up the U.S. patent system is and what a mess it is. Well, you can actually search the patents that our country has issued, and it goes back to the beginning. So it shows you five patents here, famous patents, kind of weird patents, a monkey-shaped camera bag got patented, right, because that's original. But what's interesting is the advanced search really allows you to drill down. So you can search by patent number, by inventor, by the people that were assigned the patent. I bet you guys didn't know that we have one American president, to my knowledge, that has a patent. Does anybody know who the American president is that has the patent?
Jefferson.
Who?
Jefferson?
No, Jefferson might, but that's not the one I'm thinking of.
Hoover?
I didn't know he even...
Carter?
No, you'd think Carter because of his science background. The American president that has a patent that I know of is Abe Lincoln. Abe Lincoln filed a patent for buoying vessels over shoals. It is patent number 6,469, and it was issued to him in 1849, right at, you know, long before he was really involved in politics. And it's so cool because he wrote it. Be it known that I, Abraham Lincoln of Springfield in the state of Illinois, have invented a new and improved method of combining adjustable buoyant air chambers with a steamboat or other vessel for the purpose of enabling their draft of water to be readily lessened to enable them to pass over bars or through shallow water. That's so cool. He was already my favorite Republican, and now he's even more so because he was a nerd at heart too. That's great. Yes, sir?
Microsoft claims that Linux violates 273.
And of course, since they're morons and don't know what they're saying, actually, if you look at it, as you probably know, when they say Linux, many of them are OpenOffice, Samba, Kernel. I mean,
I realize that. My question is there some way I can use Google Patent Search?
Of course not. They won't say what the patents are.
There's no.
No, they refuse to tell us what the patents are. They just want to wave their hands in the air and say we're violating 249 patents, but we're not going to tell you what they are.
Let me ask the question another way. Can you say, show me all the patents in Microsoft Homes?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And I'm sure it's thousands and thousands and thousands.
Another question is, how many have stolen?
How many of their stuff?
No, just people's patents.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I agree. Yes, sir. Okay, so that's Google. That's Google Patent Search. Notice you can also jump around in that, search within the patent and so on. Pretty neat. Google Product Search, if any of you like to shop, you can go to Google Product Search, search for things you're looking at, and it will return you with a page. Of course, I put my book in, which all of you should own, and it is the Christmas season. It does make an excellent gift, and I will sign it for you, and that adds a nickel of value. So here you go. You can look for that. Find the best place to buy it. $10.40 at buy.com. Go for it. Not going to affect my royalties either way, please. You can also, if you have a Google Checkout, only show Google Checkout if you want. This is kind of cool. You can also show Grid View, and if you show Grid View, it looks like that. So you can kind of see a lot more information a little more effectively.
Is this what was approved?
Yes, this was Frugal, and they changed the name, which sucks, because I love the name Frugal. I thought that was funny and clever, and they changed the name to Google Product Search, which is boring. This drop-down over here, you can also sort by price, rating, so that could be a different way to look at the data. And if you scroll down far enough on the page, you can really refine the results. Now, I don't know why this isn't at the top of the page, but instead it's at the bottom of the page. So you can say, sort by price, go by brand, go by store, go by rating, and so on. So that could be useful to you if you're looking up a product. Google Scholar, which somebody asked me about earlier. So you go to Google Scholar. I love their quote. Of course, all of us appreciate that, standing on the shoulders of giants. And the advanced search looks like this. Google Scholar indexes and searches scholarly publications. So you can look up references, look up books by scholars, look up who has different subject areas, date, publication, and so on. So I looked up my name, and some people have referenced some of the articles I've written, which was kind of cool. And I found references I didn't even know people had made to things I'd written. So that was kind of cool. So you can do that. Google Special Searches. This is a lot of really neat stuff that most of us probably, well, one of them you probably know about. Google says, okay, we're going to make certain search engines that focus on a particular topic. So, for instance, this is Google U.S. government search. So if you only want to search U.S. government websites to find out information, that's what this will do, U.S. government search. That is Linux search. So if you only want to search pages that are about Linux, go to that special searches page, go here, bookmark it, save it, and now you've got a way to only search Linux. BSD. Don't you love a company built on open source? Microsoft would never do this. I mean, never, ever. Unless they were bad pages about Linux and BSD, maybe. So that's so cool that Google does that, both BSD and Linux. But they also do Mac. So here you can search Mac sites if you want. You can also search, that's Microsoft. And university searches. I don't know if you guys know. I don't know if you've ever gone to WashU's website and tried to search for anything on there. Total crap. Although the worst one I've ever seen was SLU. SLU is god awful. They should be embarrassed at the quality of search. Well, actually, you can search specific educational websites within Google and let them give you the results. So there you go. They've got a huge number of schools available that you can use, so that might be a good one. Somebody had their hand up. Yes, sir.
Need to real quick here. After the meeting, we have an unofficial meeting at Halal, and food and drink is available. How many people in the tent will be going?
Whoever's going, Ed leaves before paying, so keep an eye on him. Less than 10.
Okay.
Somebody's beeping.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Google Toolbar. So you go to Google's website and you install the Google Toolbar. The Google Toolbar runs in Firefox or Internet Explorer, runs on Windows, Mac, or Linux. Once you install the Google Toolbar, he's going to hit me. Take this, Google Toolbar. The Google Toolbar appears right here in your browser, and so it provides an easy, quick interface to searches. You can change it to search images, email, whatever you want. You can control the buttons that appear. So if you go over here to this green button, that actually shows you the options. So you can choose if you want a spell check there, if you want auto link, autofill. You can choose what buttons you want to appear. You can choose more. I like this one, go up a level. So you guys ever want to truncate a URL, right, and go back? I just click that button because I'm lazy, and it automatically truncates the URL one step at a time, which can be really nice. Send to will automatically email the entire contents of web pages to people, so that can be kind of useful. And finally, layouts lets you pick what you want the toolbar to look like. I love the Google Toolbar. I put it on all my browsers. I find it tremendously useful. Google Video. Google Video, and this is separate from YouTube, but they're kind of combined, because if you go to Google Video, You get results from Google Video and from YouTube. Now, what's the difference? There's really one big difference. The big difference, well, there's two differences. The big difference is that YouTube has a 10-minute limit. So if you ever find a video on YouTube, the longest it can be is 10 minutes. Google Video can be as long as it needs to be. So I have found videos on Google Video that are 2 hours long. Now, they're bigger, but no big deal. The other big difference is Google Video allows you usually to download the video in MP4 format for viewing on iPods. You can view it on Linux as well, but you can download the video from Google Video. So, and the advanced, let me show you the advanced, and by the way, there already are concert footage from the Led Zeppelin concert Sunday night. Some of it's bad, but some of it's really good. So if you like Zeppelin, I highly encourage you to go check it out because it looked like a rockin' good concert. That is the advanced video search, so you can really tighten in on what you're looking for. So in my case, I typed in Linux, and this is key, and I'm giving you guys a little tip here. Go to domain, don't return videos from YouTube.com. So if you want to look for longer, in-depth documentaries or educational videos about Linux that usually tend to be of higher quality, then type your term in, say do not return videos from YouTube, and lo and behold, look at this. Windows Vista versus Linux, 5 minutes. Great. The Code Linux, a documentary, 59 minutes. Ubuntu Linux, Google Tech Talk. Google has people come into Google and sponsors talks there. An overview of Ubuntu given by Mark Shuttleworth, 55 minutes long. I think I was at that talk. But there you go. So you can really find long, useful stuff that you could show at a user group meeting, that you could learn from yourself, whatever. That's my tip. And by the way, if you don't want to use the interface, there's the term. You just put minus site colon in the domain. Yes, sir?
The MIT classes and videos are on there, too.
Oh, yeah.
They're great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all sorts of universities now are putting up videos of lectures and things like that. So this is an awesome tool. Now we get to Google Web Search, which is the basics, the thing we all use. So I type my name in, for instance, or whatever. But I bet most of you don't know. I'm shocked at the number of people that have never done this. Click on Preferences. If you click on Preferences there, you can choose the language you want Google's interface to be in. You can tell it what languages of the web pages you want. Now, I'm a bad person. I only speak English. So I don't want results in German or Japanese or Russian. I only want results in English. So I check English. I can say search filtering. If you have a kid and you don't want him possibly looking at stuff he shouldn't be looking at accidentally because it popped up in the search results, then you go here and say use strict filtering or use moderate filtering or do not filter. So you can control the results Google gets back to you. Now, of course, all the kid's got to do is click on preferences and change it. So, you know, it's not foolproof, but hey, it's a start.
And he changes his parent preference and they don't know how to change it back.
Of course. Of course they don't. Yeah. Or he can switch it back after he's done to strict filtering. Number of results, I always change it from 10 to 50. I want 50 results per page. I do not want 10 per page. So I highly encourage anybody in here that has broadband to change it over to 50. And if you want, you can open search results in a new window. Now, also back on this page, you had advanced search. Yes? Somebody?
I was just thinking that having the results turn in a new window and therefore linking it to...
Yeah, but a window. Use a tab, not a window. E. You know, why would anybody want to do that? That's IE behavior, not Firefox behavior. We have tabs.
Well, that way you can keep...
Well, in that case, sort of right-click on the link and choose open a new window for the occasional instance where you want to do that. So that's why that one's crazy to me. If you click on advanced search... Up at the top, you get this, and this, like many of the others, but it really gives you the ability to drill down and pick exactly the kind of thing you want. So I highly recommend you spend some time on the Google Advanced Search page. If you scroll down, you can see that that's links to those topic-specific pages I was talking about. Now I'm going to show you guys something that I think is flippin' awesome and hardly anybody knows about. I bet some of you guys in here know about a few of these. And these are called Google Web Search Features. Google actually has all these different searches built right into Google and people do not know about them. That is the rest of the list. That's a good list of about 30 things or 40. I picked out the ones I have used that I thought you guys would find particularly useful. Google Calculator. This is all done in the main Google search. You don't have to go to a special page to do this. On the main Google search box, you can type in this sort of stuff, and you'll get as a result, the very first result will be Google's answer to the calculation. But notice, half a cup in teaspoons, 160 pounds type 4,000 feet in calories. Wow. That's almost, you know, natural language queries right there. That's some powerful stuff. Try it out. Another one is currency conversion. Want to know how badly the U.S. dollar is performing against the rest of the world? Easy. Type in $10 in, you know, GBP, Great Britain pounds, or just put pounds. I never put GBP. I just put pounds or British pounds, and you'll get the result. So, I mean, this is amazing. 2.2 USD per gallon in INR per liter. Whoa. And it'll tell you the answer. That's awesome. Definitions. Want to know what the term means? Type define space and a term in, and you'll get definitions back from Google. File types. When Google searches in the results, it'll often tell you the format. You can actually search for specific file types. If you type file type colon PDF, you will only get results that are PDFs. If you type file type colon doc, you will only get Word docs, and so on and so on and so on. I use this all the time. Because if you want to find results of a specific file type, simply put that into your search results and you will get the result back. Sorry, search queries. Movies. If you type in just movies and then your zip code, Google will bring back a list of all the movies playing in your zip code with links. You click on those, it'll take you to the theater. You can buy tickets, read information about them, and so on. If you type in the name of a movie, you'll get information. It's really cool. Music.
How many miles away from my zip code?
Normally I'm pretty happy. Now, I don't want to drive 20 miles to a movie, but the movie theaters I would usually go to are all covered.
Yeah, because there's no movie theaters in my zip code.
Ah. Well, then type the zip code you want to go in. Or the city you want to drive to. You could do that, too.
Now, can you use the standard abbreviations from the OAG?
I have no idea.
Just the airline guy?
I have no idea. Probably.
In other words,
I bet you can. No, I bet you can.
Just say STL.
Well, you put movies STL.
Yeah,
I bet you can.
The STL has to be in parentheses.
Oh, it does?
It's like in Outer Banks, you go OBX in parentheses.
Okay. Okay.
We'll tell you that part of
okay.
North Carolina.
Didn't know.
ABL.
Yes, sir?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that I'm a fantastic user of, or I mean, I use this fantastically. I think it's great because I used to have my Yahoo website. And it had the movie listing.
As did I.
The
yeah.
Listings on Yahoo are contracted with the individual theater owners. One day, some couple of years ago, Weyrenberg decided that they were not going to honor that contract anymore. Weyrenberg, that's like the law theater.
Right.
St. Louis, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they come up perfectly fine in Google.
So
I dropped Yahoo like a hot potato and haven't gone back.
Excellent. There you go. Music search, type in a group or an album, and they will try to give you information about the group, the songs, and so on. Phone book, now I'm sure all of us know this. You type somebody's first name, last name, city, state in there, you'll get their phone numbers back. If it's in the publicly available white pages, same thing with businesses. Q&A, this is kind of cool. Type population of Japan in, it'll try to answer it. Type Bono's birthday, it'll try to answer it. So try some of this stuff, you'd be amazed what you'll get back right away. Refine your search. Often, sometimes, with certain topics, they will show you refined topics at the very, very top of your search results. So if you type back pain in, for instance, you can really kind of pick and choose exactly where you want to go with that. Kind of neat. Sort by number. I bet you guys didn't know if you type in a UPS number right in there, it'll come back and tell you the tracking results. Same thing with FedEx. You can type in VIN numbers, telephone area codes, UPC codes, and it will come back and tell you about that stuff. Why?
Because
I had one on the UPS tracking number.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was being shipped by UPS.
Uh-huh.
It came out, what it was a car hood, and it came out as six pallets from Russell Stover.
Oh.
Candy. Because it was an alternate shipper.
Right. Okay.
So you have to be careful that you specify who it is.
Presumably you figured that out pretty quickly.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Labeling.
Similar pages, Google will, in the results at the end, you click on that, it'll show you similar pages like the one you've chosen. Site search, now guys, I use this all the time. How many times have you guys gone to a website and they have no search engine? Right? And you're like, ugh, I can't find anything on this site. If only they had a search engine. Well, if you go to Google and you type site colon and the first the fully qualified domain name of the site and then your queries, it'll only get results back from those from that site. So it's wonderful. I use it all the time. If you find a site that doesn't have it, use that, you're good. Spell checker. Yes, Google does suggest, and I'm sure we've all seen this. So I typed in Ubuntu with two B's, and it says, did you mean Ubuntu? And so, oh, yes, and you click on that, and there's the proper spelling that you wanted.
Did Ubuntu make it into the Oxford English Dictionary?
What's that?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
What? It's up here?
When did Ubuntu make it into the Oxford English Dictionary?
I don't know. But
it is
a word.
It is a Swahili word.
Yes, it is a Swahili word. So, as is Kubuntu. So, although Kubuntu is not Swahili, Kubuntu is another African one. But yeah, you're right. Stock quotes. If you want just quick stock results at the top of your results, just type the stock symbol in there. Street maps. Just type the address in. The very first result will be a quick map to that area. When you click on it, it takes you to Google Maps. Travel information, there you go. You type in the airport information or the flight number, and it'll tell you information about the airport or the flight. Weather, I use this every day. I get up, I walk over, I have this page open in my browser as a tab, always, and I just hit search for weather and my zip code, and this is what appears at the very top. So that's what I use every day to get my weather for the day. Just type weather and your zip code, bam, you'll get it right back. Comes from Weather Underground, not those bastards at AccuWeather who tried to, what were they doing? Was it copywriting or patenting certain information and suing people? Yeah, don't use AccuWeather. They pulled some fast ones with some intellectual property stuff.
Can you get straight from the National Weather Service?
Not with this. You can go there yourself, but not from this. This uses Weather Underground. Then we get to translations. You can actually have the page translated for you if it is in a foreign language. So if you don't choose English and you choose a foreign language, then you can click translate and it'll do its best. This one's pretty cool. If you want to find out who links to you or who links to a web page you're looking at, type link colon and then the URL. So I did, you guys might remember how HP screwed me over about a year and a half ago, and I wrote that page up and it got on Dig and on several other sites, and HP ended up giving me a new computer, and which was great. Well, I saw who I wanted to see who links to that page, and there are the results. That is everything on search. That's just the first part. Now let's do exploring and innovating, shall we? Okay, Google Code. I know this is going to be attractive to a lot of you guys in here. So Google Code actually has a place where you can find out about Google's code, Google's open source programs, and they will even host your project. So yes, this is a SourceForge type of competitor. So if you don't want to use SourceForge for whatever reason, you can use Google Code to host some of your projects and make it available. These are the projects that Google hosts. Here are some projects that they host. You can search, and of course we all know that quote and appreciate that quote again. Google, the people who work at Google, guys, what I read is about 90-something percent of the employees at Google use Linux or Macs, but mostly Linux. And I read a story about a guy that used to work at Google, and he said there's tech support on every floor, and if you have a problem with your computer at Google, you just walk over to the tech support desk and ask them to help, and they will help you. And the very few people that use Windows, they go to the tech support, and the guy said the first thing when they come and say, I'm having problems with my Windows box, the first thing the tech people say to them is, why aren't you running Linux? Every time. So beat them down by attrition. So you can look up this stuff, Google Code. This is a listing of some of the various open source projects. Android is their mobile phone SDK that they just released. If any of you guys are interested in that, don't forget that Google has a $10 million bounty available to people that develop the coolest mobile phone apps using Android, their system. So if some of you guys are looking to make some money, go for it. It looks pretty cool. These are further results, and notice how many projects they're hosting. So they really have a large number there that you can check out. They also have Linux software repositories. So if you want to download Google software that runs on Linux, you can actually add Debian apt to your sources.list file, SUSE, Mandriva. Here is the plain old configuration if you want to use the command line. That is awesome. So the few Google tools that I run on my Linux box, I just stuck the repository in my sources.list file, and like any other repository, it just works. So pretty darn neat. Google Custom Search. Yes, sir?
I just wanted to add, it should be a no surprise that every summer, Google hosts the Summer of Code.
That is correct, the Google Summer of Code.
And the Summer of Code contest is hosted on Google Code.
Right there.
The results are.
Yeah. What is it, Ed? Tell them.
Well, the Summer of Code is for software programming college students. Right.
I think high school too.
Yeah, high school too. Any young person wants to. And what they do is they sponsor a project. You can nominate a project. You don't have to be UMA to nominate a project. Mm-hmm. And then people can then they'll match up the programmers to the project. And there's all kinds of cool stuff. A lot of it is open source, but a lot of it is Linux related. There's quite a lot of Ruby on Rails code, at least last summer.
What a shock.
And so, like I said, today it actually saved my butt today. It was one of the.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a really cool thing for Ruby on Rails where if you.
Hold on, Ed. Don't get into details. I don't have time.
But a lot of times you want to say, well, these users can only do these actions, right, uh-huh. on your website.
Uh-huh.
So, there's a thing, the standard default answer to that is called role requirement.
Uh-huh.
And you install that as a plugin into your Rails app.
Uh-huh.
It's a Google Summer of Code project.
Cool. And not just Linux, by the way, lots of programs like Amaro, Conker, and so on. A kid will say, I want to improve Conker or Amaro or whatever program and add an additional feature or fix a interconnectivity issue or create an API or whatever and do that. So it is very, very cool of them to do it. Google Custom Search, if you want to enable people to search your website and you don't want to buy a search engine or anything like that, you can actually go to Google Custom Search and they will create a search box and index your website for you. So if you go to my site at graneman.com and go to the search page, by gum, there it is. That's actually Google Custom Search. So it's actually powered by Google, totally free. So we've moved all our clients to that. It works tons better. I highly recommend if any of you guys have a website and you want free site search on there, just do this. Works great. Yes, sir?
Now, does this give you anything different than site :
No, it doesn't. Nope. But most people don't know how to do that, and so this is, and it looks slicker, and that way there's nothing already in the box to freak out people, so it's super easy to set up. And they give you reporting, so I could see that people have, you know, when people have been using the search on my site, and what, you know, when they search, I can even see what they search for and so on, so it's kind of cool. Google Labs. Okay, I'm going to spend quite a little bit of time here. Google Labs are basically where Google makes public the stuff they're still working on that may or may not ever see the light of day. It's experimental stuff. It may not work well. It may not work the way you want. And they may have it there for a while. And it may, in fact, be on Labs forever. Certain things I know have been on there at least 4 or 5 years and have never graduated from Labs. So this is what the Google Labs page looks like. Now, this stuff has graduated. Google Reader, for instance, was once at Google Labs. So here are some various things. I'm going to point out a couple of them to you. Here's more. So here's more. Here's an ad. If you want to work at Google and know anything about this stuff, there you go. So here's one I wanted to show you guys. I thought was pretty cool. It's called Alternative Views for Search. So they experiment all the time with different ways to present search results to people. Here's one called timeline results. So you search for Thomas Jefferson and type in view colon timeline, and it takes all the results and sorts them by date with this timeline. That is pretty cool. And the fact that they have machine intelligence able to do that, that's pretty impressive. But check this out. You can also do it by view info, and it gets you search results over here. So they typed in space exploration, view colon info, and here are the results. But then you can filter by date, measurements, locations, or images. Or, now this one I know the Vim lovers in here, you guys are going to be like, oh, thank God. Finally, look at this. If you go to this, you can actually use J, K, O, and all that good stuff. Yeah. So you can actually navigate your Google results just like it's a Vim page. There's also a Grease Monkey script, by the way, for Firefox that lets you totally Vimify the web. Everything you go to, you can navigate amongst the links and everything on the page like with Vim keys. So if you've so internalized the Vim commands, you might find that one interesting. I thought that was kind of neat. You can also search code. So Google Labs has a code search available where you can search public source code. And here you go. There are different results and different ways of doing it. There are other search engines that do code searching. Talk to Ed. I know Ed knows a few of them and has some opinions as about what's good and what's bad, if you guys want to know other code search engines. There are Firefox extensions available from Google Labs. Google Browser Sync. You install Google Browser Sync on different Firefox browsers, and it syncs your bookmarks, your history, pretty much everything else in your browser back and forth in the background. So if you're like me and you have more than one computer and you like have everything in sync, Google Browser Sync will help keep that stuff synced. I'm going to keep going because we
have. Do it for Thunderbird?
No, it's browser only. Browser only. Firefox only. There may be an extension to do stuff like that for Thunderbird, but none that I know. Google Trends. You can actually see what's hot and what people have been searching for and how much. So I, of course, thought to myself, what do people search for a lot? And of course I typed in Britney Spears. And so you can actually see, the number of results, search volume, and you can see the spikes and what happens to cause the spikes. So she files for divorce, boom, a bunch of people search for her. She goes on MTV and looks like even more than a moron than she normally is. Boom, spike there. You can see who's searching for her. So Britney is evidently really hot in Mexico. Got me. Must be. I also searched for Ubuntu. Now check that out. That should warm our hearts. Look at that general movement. Isn't that cool? To go from nothing in 2004 up to that, and you can see when the spikes are occurring. Look at that. When Dell announced Ubuntu was going to be on there, yeah, that's really nice stuff. So, and of course, all of us appreciate the fact that Helsinki, Finland is the number one city that people are searching for Ubuntu. That's great. I mean, just think of all the kids that have to write reports on famous people from Finland. I mean, who are they going to pick? Right? There's some people, but there's an obvious one that we all know about. Right. Yes, there is, especially in the poorer districts of Spain that are moving to it. That's right. That's right. Then there's Google Mars. So in the same way Google Maps looks at the Earth, you can also go to Google Mars and zoom in and out and look at the surface of Mars. Well, hell, if we got Mars, we should also have Google Moon. And I'm sorry it's so dark. If you were looking at it, it'd be fine up here. But you can do searches and show you where all the Apollo landings were on Mars. You can also see other things besides Apollo. You can just see the visible surface of the moon, the elevation of the moon. You can zoom in and out, move around, and so on. I checked this out today, and I was extremely disappointed and upset. It used to be with Google Moon that as you zoomed in, it got closer and closer to the moon, and on the final one, it turned into cheese. And it literally looked like Swiss cheese, and they got rid of it. I was going to take a screenshot and show you guys, and I couldn't do it because they got rid of it. So I'm sorry. It lives on in my memory. That's the next section. The third section. Communicate, show, and share. First of all, Blogger. Here's my opinion. Blogger sucks. Do not use Blogger for your blogs. It does suck, doesn't it? It sucks. It sucks.
I just have to relate something. For 2 weeks, my homepage on my blog, right, I've been hijacked by some completely different company. And all the interfaces all work, but that thing was, and then it sort of fixed itself.
Nice.
Like, what?
Right. So if you want to blog, use WordPress. Or you guys might have seen, did you guys see what happened today in the blog world? Movable Type is now open source. They GPL'd it today. So there you go. This is an indication to me how sucky Blogger is. Look at that WYSIWYG. That is a hunk of dew. So awful. Google Calendar, however, on the other hand, is the finest online calendar I know. I have moved all of my calendaring onto Google Calendar. It is excellent for a lot of reasons. You can have as many calendars as you want. So here is my calendar here showing my talk tonight. But you'll notice I've got other calendars here with other people. If I check this box and this person has shared their calendar with me and interleaves their calendar on top of mine. And so if you have a family, for instance, my business partner Jans has a calendar, his wife has a calendar, and they have a calendar for their 5-year-old daughter that they both can edit. And so he can check the boxes to see who's got to pick up who, when, where, and what the schedule is, and so on. And either parent can add to the calendar of the child. So it's a really effective way to keep track of a family and where everybody is and where they're supposed to be. Yes, sir?
Do you know if it can import and export?
Hell yes, it can import and export. It can import and export like nobody's business. In fact, you can view the calendar in KOrganizer or Evolution or Thunderbird Lite with Lightning extension because it supports iCal integration. So you just connect to the iCal URL and boop, you can now view it. You can't add to it, but you can view it, which means you now have offline viewing. Isn't that cool? It's very cool. This shows you what it looks like to add an event. And by the way, this is the best thing in the world. Some of you know me a little better than others, and those of you who do know me know I am forgetful as hell. Okay? If I saw that Ed was on fire and was like, oh my God, I need to get a fire extinguisher, and turned around, I would forget immediately that he was on fire. Actually, I would do that on purpose to see him. It could be kind of funny. But this is what's cool about Google Calendar. You can have reminders sent to you via pop-ups in your web browser, via email reminders, or, and this one is key, SMS text message reminders. You can have as many as you want. So you can have one sent to you an hour and a half before it's due, and maybe that one is email, SMS, and pop-up, and then an hour before it's due, it's only email and SMS, text message, and then a half hour before it's due, it's text message, whatever you want, but you can set that up to have those alerts sent to you, and this has saved my bacon more times than you could imagine. So I urge you guys to check that out. Google Docs. Basically, this is what I also call Microsoft starting to wet itself. Because Google Docs, did you guys know Microsoft now has Office Live? Did you guys know about that? Did you see what a hunk of crap that is? Do you know what it is? Typical Microsoft fashion. Let me get off my soapbox for a moment and bitch about Microsoft. Typical Microsoft fashion, they are threatened by Google Docs. They are threatened by Zoho Writer. They're threatened by a Buzzword. If you guys have not checked out Buzzword, it's now owned by Adobe. It is a Flash-based word processor that is slicker than you would believe. Go check it out. It's free for now. Really neat. So Microsoft's starting to feel the pressure because all these other services are having online word processing, online spreadsheets, online presentations. They have to protect their cash cow of Office. So what do? They come up with Office Live, except there's actually two pieces to Office Live. Yes, you can create documents in a web browser at Office Live. And it looks a lot like Word, but you know what? You can't export or save them to your computer. They are stuck in the web browser up on Microsoft server. There is no export. There is no save as. The only way to get it out is to copy and paste. Or you can use Microsoft Office 2007 and save your documents up to Microsoft's file storage, but you can't edit them online except using Office 2007. So if you want to do online editing in the browser, you can do it, but you can't save it. Or you can store it and edit it, but you can't access it in the web. Typical Microsoft fashion. ends up being completely useless. But that's not what Google is doing. Google allows you to save documents of a variety of different topics. You can create folders, label them, and so on, and make them available. This is the word processor. And again, guys, Google Docs is not some really super advanced word processor. If you're looking for features and features and features, OpenOffice will suit the bill. But for the 90% of things most people need to do when they're editing a document or creating a word processing document, Google Docs does a fantastic job. So I have created a document, I've inserted a picture, I've put a table in, I've got lists, I've got colors, I've got links. Here's the edit bar up there. Notice that you can insert images, links, comments, tables, bookmarks, separators, special characters. You can keep track of revisions. So much like Wikipedia, it keeps an automatic revision of all your changes as you save them. You can edit the HTML directly. If you don't like the way something looks or you know HTML and want to fix it, you can edit the HTML directly. You can share the document with other people as collaborators, which means they can log in and edit the document. Or as viewers, and I know for a fact, I think Ed and I have done this, I know you've done it though, Ed, but let's say that I share the document with Ted and Stan, so the three of us are all logged in on our computers looking at the same document. We all three can be typing on this document at the exact same time, and we will see each other's changes appear as we are typing. So if you are looking for a collaborative environment online, this works beautifully. Yes, sir?
Yeah, I did the same thing with some guys in India.
Uh-huh.
And we were using Skype to talk to each other over audio, VoIP. Mm-hmm. And so I said, oh, just bring it up in Google Docs. And what's Google Docs? I said, just go here, you know. They brought it up in Google Docs or whatever, since I brought the document up. They'd actually sent me the original document in Microsoft Word.
Of course, right? Of course.
And I imported it
over right
there.
Right.
And I said, okay, this is where I've got a problem. Right? Mm-hmm. I just highlighted it. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's not a problem. And they go, oh, okay. And so
what it Yeah, it works perfectly. So I use this all the time with my business partners. So if you want to collaborate on a document live and see those changes appearing at the same time, this will do the job. You can also publish the document to the wide world where anybody can see the document and view the document. And this is where Google shows its true colors, because Google does not want to lock your data up into proprietary formats like our buddies up in Redmond, Washington do. Because if you go to the file menu, you can export the document as an HTML file, as an RTF, as Word, as OpenOffice, as PDF, or as text. You can also import Word documents, OpenOffice documents, text documents, HTML documents, OpenOffice documents, and so on. So Google allows you pretty much to import documents and to export documents in different formats. They do not want to lock your data up. Yes, sir? Not that I know of yet. Although you could use the presentation program probably to do that, which I will get to in one sec.
Because I have a question on that.
Okay.
And PDF, will it support 3D PDF?
I have no idea what the hell a 3D PDF even is. So I don't know. Got me? Find out and let us know.
All right.
Yeah. They also have spreadsheets. Again, if you're looking for the uber-powerful spreadsheet, this won't do it, but it has the basics. I have blacked out this list of student names. I was using this to collaborate with somebody that I was teaching a class with, keep track of attendance and grades and so on. Again, you can sort A to Z. You can freeze header rows. And I always explain to my non-technical students, you have no idea how hard that is to do, how sophisticated it is for them to be able to freeze the header rows in a web browser like that. That is really, really cool. There's your functions. You can insert a huge variety of functions in there. Again, most people, this is more than enough. You can chat about the spreadsheet while you are editing it. You can share. Oh, you can also share it, publish it, and so on. They just unveiled their presentation program. It's real basic. It's real simple. I don't think it's that great, but they keep improving these things all the time. So they just unveiled this, so let's give them a chance. That's Google Docs. Guys, if you haven't tried Google Docs, go use it. I mean, I store a bunch of stuff in there. It's awesome. Google Gears. If you guys haven't heard about Google Gears, oh my gosh, you're going to love this. Google Gears is a plug-in for Firefox that works on Linux, Mac, and Windows. You install the Google Gears plug-in, okay, and if a website builds support for Google Gears into it, now by website I mean web app, okay, and if you guys know Bill Edney, Bill Edney's Tibet, I remember the day this came out. This is how, you guys that know Bill Edney know he's pretty amazing. The day Google Gears came out, I happened to talk to Bill the next day. I'm like, hey, how you doing? He goes, oh my God, I'm tired as hell. I was like, oh, what's up? He goes, oh, I was up all night. I was like, why are we up all night? He goes, oh, we were integrating Google Gears into Tibet, but it's done now. It's done. So it's all ready to go. So it's you can do it. What happens if you integrate Google Gears into your app? You can go offline with a dynamic application and continue to use it offline. When you go back online, it syncs all your changes back up. Right now, Google Reader supports this. Gmail does not, but that is coming any day now. Google Docs does not, but that is coming any day now. Guys, on that day that Google Docs supports it, Microsoft is going to crap itself. Because at that point, you will be able to edit documents for free in your browser and then take them offline and continue to work on them offline in your browser and then go back online at your convenience and resync the changes back up there. I will be really curious to see if they ever, ever, ever implement anything like that whatsoever. I would not hold my breath. So I went to a site called Zoho, which is actually a Google Docs competitor, because I wanted to show you guys what it looks like. And so right here it says go offline. So this is a test I gave my students in a class. You click go offline. And it says, okay, fine, what are the settings? How many docs, how many shared docs do you want to download and save? You click it, and it goes into offline mode and pulls the docs down into a SQLite database on your box. You are now able to edit the document, read the document, whatever you want, and notice it now says you are offline, go online, make your changes. In my case, I put the following questions are worth 5 points each. Click to go online, and lo and behold, the word questions is now back. We're now back online. It synced it back up. So as of right now, the only Google service that supports Google Docs is Google Reader. But we know for a fact, because they've announced it at Google, that Google Gmail and Google Docs is coming to have support for this for both online and offline usage. Gmail, I mean, I bet a lot of you guys already in here use Gmail. Gmail's the best online email there is. Here's a better picture showing you, and you guys all know the basics of Gmail. You got your conversation view, you got your searches, you have integrated chat, so you can easily do the chat. You have awesome spam filtering. It's heavily Ajax-based. It's extremely innovative. At this point, you have over 4 gigs of storage. By January, you're going to have 6 gigs of storage for free. You have webmail and POP3, and I hope you guys know about 2 months ago, they added IMAP access, so you can now access your Gmail with IMAP as well as POP, which has changed my world forever.
Is there a fee for that?
No, it's all free.
POP is free?
POP is free. IMAP is free. Labels instead of folders, autosave, calendar integration. If you receive an email from somebody and there's a date in it, on the right side it'll offer to put that date and the event into your Google Calendar for you already. So it is amazing. It's great. Yes, sir. Oh, Stan, you have such a pain in the ass problem with Google and their mail. It's you. It's got to be you. Yeah, it's got to be you. Switch to IMAP. He's right. Why don't you try IMAP? Yeah. Try that. See if that works.
One quick question. I can't talk about that.
Yes, I was going to say that, but you just that's fine. So now it's not just Google Chat and Jabber support, which was before. It now integrates with AIM as well. So if you want to use AOL Instant Messenger buddies, you can access them in Gmail as well. If you have your own domain name, you can sign up for Google Apps for your domain. Google Apps for your domain allows you to have, with your domain name, Gmail, Google Calendar, Google Talk, a web page, Google Docs, and so on. Now, there are different levels. Guys, I think if you have your own domain name and you don't do this, you're crazy, because it's free. So you get all that stuff. You get 4.7 gigs, and it goes up every day per account at your domain name. So in my case, I set up Graneman.com. So to get my mail online, I go to mail.graneman.com. It is Gmail. but it is branded with my name, my domain name. To go to my calendar, I go to calendar.graneman.com, docs.graneman.com, start.graneman.com for my iGoogle page. So if you own your own domain name, do this. It's free. If you want to pay $50 per account per year, you get 25 gigs per person and some extra goodies. So I really think, I know ByteWorks is doing this. This is something you guys should look at for schools. Every school should do this. People should not have to manage their own email. Outsource the email. Let other people manage it. Let them take care of it. This is a great way to do it. Google Groups. Google Groups is actually a couple of things. Google Groups is an interface to search Usenet archives. You guys might remember Deja News. They bought Deja News. So you can search Usenet archives, but you can also create your own mailing lists, like Yahoo Groups. So I have several groups that I manage and help run. This is one of them, the Central West End Linux Users Group. And so you can see I'm logged in to manage it and edit memberships and so on. Orkut, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on. That's their social networking service they started. This is what's weird. Orkut was launched about 5 years ago, and very few Americans used it, but they love it in Brazil. So literally 75% of the people that use this service are in Brazil. I'm teaching a Brazilian woman this semester, and we were talking about Google, and all of a sudden I went, Orkut? She goes, oh, God, yes, we all use Orkut. I mean, everybody uses Orkut.
ORKUT?
ORKUT. It's a social... You want to meet some Brazilians?
No.
So, is that what this is? You lonely from Brazilians? From Brazilians? So there you go. Picasa. Picasa is a tool that allows you to manage photos. So in the case of Macs, you have iPhoto, and yeah, I know on Linux we have DigiCam and we've got FSpot. Look, I don't like DigiCam, I don't like FSpot. Picasa runs on Linux. Now it uses Wine to do it, but it works really well on Linux. I've used it, it works just fine and dandy. Also works on Windows. So basically Windows and Linux. It allows you to manage your photo libraries, but it also allows you to upload your pictures up to a Picasa web album, and like Flickr, for instance, you can search. So I went to Picasa Web Albums and did a search on Shizu, and these are people's results that come back of photos of Shizus from Picasa. Google SketchUp was another piece of software that Google bought and made free. SketchUp is basically a 3D design tool that allows you to design all sorts of different things, including cities, CAD, transportation, the Star Trek USS Enterprise. So basically you can use this tool to design 3D structures of whatever you want, and you can integrate SketchUp into Google Earth. So if you use SketchUp to design one of these buildings I was talking about, you can then place that wireframe into Google Earth. Yes? I have no idea. Does anybody know?
You can export SketchUp to Blender for surface treatment.
Can you import?
I don't think so.
Okay. There's your answer. Sorry. Google Talk, as we just talked about, is Google's chat. Google Talk works in the browser, like I showed you, but you can also download it on Windows as a chat client that runs on your machine. So there you go. Doesn't get me excited. Google Translate, this is pretty darn cool. You can type in phrases, and it will translate and give you the translated results. You can type text in here. You can also have Google interface in these languages. I'd like you guys to notice, if you don't want to use Google in English, right? You don't want to use Google in English. You want to practice a foreign language? Yes, you could have Google in Klingon.
Bork, bork, bork.
Or bork, 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 which is the Swedish chef. So it'll say, I'm feeling lucky, bork, bork, bork. You've also got Hacker, which is leet speak. So, you know, most of us are too old to deal with that crap, but it's there if you want it. But there's all sorts of weird languages on here. There's some others. I can't. Esperanto is up there, you'll notice. So there's all sorts. And what if you want to search Google as though you're in a different country? You can do that on this page as well. So you can search the Google indexes from different countries. And you can also translate. So notice right here where it says translate a web page. So I put my own address in and said, okay, what's my website look like in Italian? Bam, it translated my whole website and returned the result in Italian. Now, I don't speak Italian, okay? But I figure if I memorize a couple of these sentences, it'll sound like I know Italian, you know?
And there's an English on there. We've got a list server.
Maybe that's Italian.
No,
I know. But anyway, there you go. Now, I like this. Scott Ultimo Libro. That sounds good. It just makes you want to do that when you talk, you know? So there you go. You can translate it, and it works out pretty well. YouTube, of course, we all know what YouTube is. We've all gone to YouTube. I'm not going to spend much time on that. Mobile. Mobile phones, obviously, are now the hot thing. Everybody in here has a mobile phone. Google is recognizing that. You can get Google Maps on your mobile phone. Now, of course, the best way to view Google Maps on your phone is to get an iPhone, which I will cover in just a sec. But pretty much any phone, you can view maps using Google. Or you can actually go to Google Mobile, and you can do all sorts of things there. You can search the web using Google on your phone. You can view an ad to your calendar on your phone. You can go to Google Reader on your phone. You can view, but not edit yet, your Google Docs on your phone. Although, my God, editing Google Docs on a normal phone, having to hit numbers 10 times, that would be awful. But there you go. But there's some really neat stuff you can specifically do. For instance, everybody in here, I bet, knows that if you call 411 with your cell phone provider, you will get screwed in the amount of money you're going to get charged for that 411 call. But if you dial 1-800-GOOG-411, it is a free 411 call. A certain percentage of the calls will have ads, many will not. So you may have to listen to a 10-second ad before you get your results. Big deal. You're saving an enormous amount of money. So what I did in my phone is I actually programmed that number in to the address book. You might want to think about doing the same thing to save a few bucks. However, as I said, Google now has a specific interface for the iPhone. These are screenshots showing that you can access and view Gmail in your iPhone. You can view your Google Calendar in the iPhone. You can view Google Reader in the iPhone. And you can access other Google services in your iPhone. However, text messaging, SMS, is still big. A lot of people do it. If you put into your address book 466-453, which spells Google, you can send text messages to that number with queries and get the results back as a text message, usually it's instantaneous, it may be a minute or two. So for instance, here are all of these you can do. Movies space zip code. Send a text message. You will get back a list of movies and theaters in that zip code to your phone. Pretty much all that stuff we talked about with those special searches, you can send an SMS text message to Google and get results back. This is awesome if you're on the go and you don't have a good web browser on your phone, but you have text messaging, you can still query Google. I used to use this all the time. Well, last section, make your computer work better is what Google calls it. This is the Google Pack. To the guys in here, we don't care about this, to be honest. This is Windows software. There's a Mac software. There is nothing for Linux like this. Basically, Google Pack is a whole bunch of software that you can download together for Windows. So here are various ones. There's everything from Adobe Reader to Firefox. A lot of Google software. The idea is instead of having to go to 10 or 20 different websites to download software, you can just go here and get the stuff most people are going to need for the basics. That's right. In fact, there we go. It has Star Office, which is amazing because it's free. I mean, normally Star Office costs money. Yeah, if you want to download Star Office for free on a Windows machine, just get the Google Pack and you can uncheck everything else except Star Office. So this is an easy way to get Star Office for free on a Windows machine.
Is it really better than the free version of it?
I don't think so. I mean, basically, if a business, if you're trying to convince a business owner to go with Open Office, and he's like, well, I want somebody I can yell at. Fine, get Star Office. Then you can call Sun, you get tech support. So there you go. And I think you get, what, extra fonts and a few extra templates and
file translation.
Yeah, some proprietary stuff, but for most of us, OpenOffice is fine and dandy. Google Web Accelerator is basically a proxy So you can actually, it only works with DSL and broadband, but basically it's just a proxy cache. So it sends page requests through Google machines and downloads it from Google's machines. None of us, first of all, only works on Windows, so none of us really are going to use it. And second of all, anybody in here, we could set up our own proxy server if we needed to, but it is using Google servers, so it's going to be able to leverage that. Hey, guess what? That's the whole damn thing. That's 200.
250 in less than 2 hours.
That was 250 slides in less than 2 hours.
New record.
That is a new record. Does anybody have any questions?
What's Google's revenue stream? With all the stuff being provided.
Ads, baby. 95% of their money comes from advertising.
Ads.
Yep, ads, 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 ads. That's where it comes from.
Hold on, Nick.
Let me say something before I forget, because I will forget. You guys all familiar with the long tail? You guys are familiar with the long... Is anybody not familiar with the long tail?
What?
The long tail is basically a power curve. Chris Anderson, the editor at Wired, wrote a book called The Long Tail, like that, okay? And he basically pointed out that nowadays, thanks to the internet, what Netflix, you guys all know Netflix, right? What Netflix figured out was a way to monetize the long tail. If you're Blockbuster and you have a physical inventory, right, it's not worth it. You simply can't afford to keep movies on location in your building, pay lights and employees and all that, that are for movies that are only rented once or twice a year, or once or twice a month even, right? So, but Netflix, what's interesting is, and this is shown over and over again in terms of Amazon, in terms of books sold, Netflix, other services, Netflix makes as much as or more money from this end of the long tail, from this, rentals to people that are interested in niche or specialized products, because it costs virtually nothing for them to have them available. Right? So that's what's called the long tail. The idea being that now, thanks to the internet and other more innovative ways of providing services and goods to people, it is now possible to monetize the long tail. That's what Amazon has done. Everybody in here, I know that it reads anything. We've all ordered a book that hardly anybody else has ordered on Amazon. But Amazon still has figured out a way to make money off that sale. Prior to Google, there were online ad sellers like DoubleClick, for instance, right? But the problem was, if you came to DoubleClick and said, "Hi, I'm a small mom and pop shop in St. Louis, and I need to buy some ads," and they're like, "Great, we're talking $10,000 a month minimum," and you'd be like, "Whoa! I'm talking like $20 a month. That's all I want, and I only want to target specifically the people that are interested in Italian grocery stores." DoubleClick would be like, "Forget it. We can't do it." The way Google, what the genius of Google, and the reason the two boys that founded Google, and I say boys because they're in their 20s, those bastards, are now the fifth richest people in America in 10 years. They've gone from being grad students to the fifth richest people in America in 10 years, is because they realized that with the internet and the web and the right algorithm, you could monetize advertising as the long tail. And so what people will do is they will literally pay Google $5 a month, $3 a month, $20 a month, maybe $1,000 a month for very tightly targeted advertising. And that's their genius. That's what they figured out. And that's how they make their money.
Now, what you didn't get into are the business services.
I did not, because then we would be here till 10.
I wish we... Can you do another slide? Maybe
I'll come some other time. What's that?
That's another 200 slides.
That's another 200 slides. That's exactly right. Does anybody else have any questions? Anything? Thank you, guys. I look forward to the next time we see each other, but I am not going to suggest another talk at this point. I'm going to let you ask me. So thank you all. I'll see you soon.
Thanks. Great. Really.
And would you send me an email? We should talk bad things about Craig right now. Tell him how we all hate him.
Yeah.
If you send me an email, I'll save.